Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to This Miraculous Life on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Oliveri Olumba. I have my master's degree in positive psychology, which is basically the scientific study of human thriving. And for the past 2 years, I have been voted best life coach in Washington, D.C. So I started this podcast because what I really want for all of us is to be able to liberate ourselves from the bullshit. You know, all the crap that we kind of collect as we go through our lives and our brains, how we interpret the world around us, and for all of us to be able to tune in with what life really is, which is a profound and miraculous gift. So each episode, I will be responding to real life problems, questions, even good news, with practical, sometimes science-based, honest, and real feedback about how to go about tuning in with the miraculousness of life and tuning out the bullshit. So I'm here today with Alexia Brown, my amazing studio engineer. So I have a question for you, Alexia.
Awesome.
Have you heard about this new, this recent BuzzFeed article about millennial burnout?
I have not. So enlighten me, please.
So I'm pulling it up right now. So this article has been shared with me by like four different people in the same week. So they were like, "This we need to talk about this." And then I read it. It's the longest article I think ever published on BuzzFeed. I don't know that, but it's really long. It's like longer than an Atlantic article. I was like, what is this?
Okay, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, I see you, BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. At least I think BuzzFeed is the original publisher. I'm not 100% sure on that. But basically, this article is an in-depth exploration of why millennials are so fucked. Essentially, but it's basically, no, it's an in-depth exploration, but that's true. Like, that's really kind of what the article is, but it's an in-depth exploration of the invisible burnout that is faced by millennials. So it's called How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation, and it's written by Anne Helen Peterson. And so she did a really phenomenal job because obviously this article is resonating with a lot of people. Like I said, multiple people in the same, like on the same day, I got multiple emails from people that were like, can we please talk about this article? So I want to talk about the article because I do think that it's really relevant. And she breaks down sort of what is happening. I am a millennial. So in the article, she explains that millennials currently are between the ages about 22 to 38. So I am 31. So I'm closer to the end of the millennial generation, but I'm also sort of in the middle. So I'm like a millennial through and through, basically. So this article is relevant to me, but also relevant to all of my peers, including the ones who are a little bit older and a little bit younger than me. So I'm gonna basically share some tidbits from the article for those of you
who are not familiar, who haven't read the article yet. And then I absolutely recommend that you all go and read the article, particularly if you are a millennial, if you have a millennial in your life, if you're a parent to a millennial, or if you just think that you might relate to the plight of the millennial. So the article is basically talking about the phenomenon of millennials not being able to do things that seem like basic tasks, like register to vote in an election or do their laundry or go grocery shopping and make meals on a regular basis, and how we've been characterized as this generation of people who are sort of lazy and incapable and failing at the transition to adulthood. And she takes a really honest look at why that might be and how as millennials, we are often, we're critical of other millennials' failures to do tasks that we do succeed at, but we are not always honest with ourselves about the ways in which we also are failing on kind of the same level. So for example, Anne Helen, the woman who wrote the article, mentions, the article starts out by her interviewing this guy who was intending to vote in the 2018 midterm elections, but then the prospect of like filling out papers and then mailing them, like sending physical mail, just became too overwhelming for him, and he was not able to complete the task, and therefore he didn't vote. And so she's kind of in her, this is my interpretation of the article, by the way, she's kind of in her mind judging him, but then she, as she sits down to start to report on this, she thinks about, well, I'm judging him, but at the same time, I have this, she calls it errand paralysis, I think is what she calls it. I have this errand paralysis, and maybe I registered to vote, but I also have this growing list of tasks that I have not been able to get myself to do, such as go to the grocery store, register my pet for their pet license or pet registration, whatever it is, you know, go to the DMV to get my tags updated. Like all of these tasks that are seemingly simple and don't require necessarily, but don't require like a master's degree or a PhD or something like that. Like all of us are technically capable of doing these tasks, and yet they just weigh so heavily that we put them off and put them off and put them off, and therefore acquire ourselves a bad reputation, but B, also a sort of disorganized life. So let me read a couple of excerpts from the article that really stood out to me. So this is what the author of the article says, the reporter. She says, "We are spoiled, entitled, lazy, and failures at what has come to be known as adulting, a word invented by millennials as a catch-all for the tasks of self-sufficient existence." She goes on to say, "Expressions of adulting do often come off as privileged astonishments at the realities of, well, life. That you have to pay bills and go to work, that you have to buy food and cook it if you want to eat it, that actions have consequences. Adulting is hard because life is hard. Or, as a Bustle article admonishes its readers, everything is hard if you want to look at it that way." She says, Tim is the guy in the article who she is sort of at first judging for not registering to vote because it was too hard. She says, "Tim and I are not alone in this paralysis." This is her errand paralysis. "My partner was so stymied by the multi-step, incredibly and purposefully confusing process of submitting insurance reimbursement forms for every single week of therapy that for months he just didn't send them and ate over $1,000. Another woman told me that she had a package sitting unmailed in the corner of her room for over a year. A friend admitted he's absorbed hundreds of dollars in clothes that don't fit because he couldn't manage to return them. Errand paralysis, post office anxiety, they're different manifestations of the same affliction. And what she comes to realize is that affliction is burnout. So here's what she says. She says, the more I tried to figure out my errand paralysis, the more the actual parameters of burnout began to reveal themselves. Burnout and the behaviors that weigh, the behaviors and weight that accompany it are not, in fact, something we can cure by going on vacation. It's not limited to workers in acutely high stress environments, and it's not a temporary affliction. It is a millennial condition. It is our base temperature. It is our background music. It's the way things are. It's our lives. That makes me feel really sad. That like brought tears to my eyes. She said, that realization recast my recent struggles. Why can't I get this mundane stuff done? ? Because I am burned out. Why am I burned out? I'm burned out because I have internalized the idea that I should be working all the time. Why have I internalized that idea? Because everything and everyone in my life has reinforced it, explicitly and implicitly, since I was young. Life has always been hard, but many millennials are unequipped to deal with the particular ways in which it has become hard for us. Okay, so I want to pause, and there's a little bit more that I want to share on why she says that, but that gave me chills, and the reason why is because it does resonate, you know? I'm a life coach. Right? So I'm supposed to be really good at balance and boundaries and not burnout. But what she speaks about, this, why am I burned out? Because I've internalized the idea that I should be working all the time. And that burnout for millennials is not a temporary condition because of an acute stress. It is a generational condition because of the way that we have been trained, like she said, by everyone and everything around us, implicitly or explicitly. And, you know, this resonates with me on so many levels because, the truth be told, my parents never were the type of parents to put a lot of pressure on me to be high performing. That pressure easily, asserted itself without my parents ever even having to say it. I can remember by the time, I remember clearly that a teacher had told me that your grades don't start counting until you're in the sixth grade. Because when you're in the sixth grade, your grades, your performance in school determines your placement for middle school. And in middle school, that's when you like start the pathway towards adulthood, right? So I was like kind of a shitty student in like first through fifth grade. I didn't even like school. I didn't really like reading, and like I wasn't that into it, but I was aware that by the time I got to sixth grade, I became aware of the risks and there's a word that's more powerful than risks. The like, can you think of something, Alexia? Like
consequences, the like ramifications. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm thinking of like, yeah, those are all great. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of like some sort of like dismal future.
Oh, wow.
Like, but like, if you don't get your act together in sixth grade, then you're going to be like, then you're definitely going to be, you know, homeless. You're never going to have. Yeah. Doom. Yeah. Just like whatever word you would use to describe like walking into a lion's den and like you like know that there's a lion in there that's hungry. So like that's what I thought. I'm like, oh, OK. Like I knew that I didn't really honestly like enjoy some of the stuff. But that I was capable. So like, that's the good part is that I recognized my capability. And, but like I was basically like, oh, okay. So now from this point forward, I have to work at my highest possible capacity in order to avoid like dooming myself for the rest of eternity. And that's what I thought in sixth grade. And I started school young. So I think that in sixth grade, let's see, in kindergarten, I was 4. In first grade, I was 5. As you see, math was not my strong suit. In second grade, I was 6. In third grade, I was 7. In fourth grade, I was 8. Fifth grade, I was 9. So in sixth grade, I was like 11. I was like 10 or 11, I think. I was like 10 at the beginning of sixth grade, I think. So I'm like 10 or 11 years old. And I'm like, okay, Sarah, now is the time to get your shit together so that you can get placed with the smart kids in the seventh grade and then in eighth grade and then like get into those, you know, accelerated or AP classes, whatever, so that you can get into a good college, so that you can get a job, you know, and like have a good life. I was like, it was sixth grade, and I was like, okay, Sarah, time to, for the rest of your life, perform at your highest possible capacity in order to avoid doom. Just like doom and dismal, awful, terrible life experiences. And if you don't do that, then, you know, basically, if you end up with a terrible, shitty life, it's your own damn fault. Right? That is the message that I internalize. And truth be told, like in ways, I have celebrated that message because that message did get me to perform at a very high level, a higher level than I ever performed in first through fifth grade. But it also fucked with my head. Like it also made me like not enjoy life anymore. That like this is the true facts. Okay. I'm actually just realizing this. You guys, I'm having a moment. I was like a happy person before sixth grade. Sixth grade was cool because sixth grade was when I learned this, and then I got some affirmation for showing my aptitude, and that felt good. It felt good to show my aptitude and my ability. But seventh through 12th grade, I can honestly say that those were the unhappiest years of my whole life, right? And I think that the reason why is because that was the time when I was really absorbing this message that I do need to be not only working all the time, but that if I work at anything less than my full capacity, then I'm like justified in having a super crappy life forever. You know, if there's like one test that I didn't study for, I still think this way. Like this is no joke. It still feels like if there's one test in the 10th grade that you're like, you know what? I'm just not going to study for this test. It's one test, right? We take like hundreds of tests, especially the millennial generation and younger. So the one test, I'm like, I'm not going to study for this test. I just don't want to. And then I get a poor grade on that test. And then I end up with just a terrible life where I'm doing something that I don't like and that I don't get paid well for. And I'm just trapped in this dark pit of despair forever. Then I deserved it because I didn't study for one test. How lazy and irresponsible can I be, right? So this is the message. And I think those years were the worst because that was when I was learning it. You know what I mean? That was when it was becoming truly the paradigm through which I viewed the world. And I still had it when I entered college. But then I'm really grateful. I think that in college I was able to have a shift, and I'll talk more about that. But I want to take a pause because I've told you guys what we're talking about today, what this sort of revolutionary, I would call it, article. I think this article is really brilliant, and that multiple people in the same day sent me this article. They're like, we need to talk, Sarah. So I want to check in with Alexia and see what you think. And if this also resonates with you, I know that you can maybe be considered a millennial,
yeah.
But that you would be on the side of the young millennial.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell me what you're thinking and feeling, and how much of this, you know, as someone who is, like I said, I'm in sort of in the middle. So I'm a millennial through and through. There's no way around me being a millennial. I'm not like at the edge of either end of the age spectrum. But you're maybe a little bit at the edge. So I wonder if this still resonates with you, and what you're picking up so far.
Sure. Yeah. I think, I'm in college now. So that burnout pressure is like a little more obvious, or people are allowed to talk about it a little more. I think like it's expected that undergraduate students are just burnt out. But it resonates a lot. I feel very like, I personally feel very lazy. But I'm also, and then I tell people that, and they're like, that's absolutely insane. Like, you are doing so much.
Right.
You're always traveling from this place and that place. And I'm like, no. Like, I feel lazy. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, parse out what is the truth.
Right.
So you said that, and it made a lot of sense of like, I feel like I'm doing a lot, but I also feel like I'm not doing enough. And like,
right,
there's just always more to achieve and more to do in order to secure the fact that I'm not going to like be doomed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like I do feel like you're speaking to that errand paralysis that the author speaks about. And also that internalization of the idea that we should be working all the time.
Exactly.
And I wonder what is happening with this current generation and the generation that's currently in college, and if some of the messages that they are receiving are the same as what millennials received, and if not, what the differences are. I think there's also even more challenges. I mean, what I have to say is, like, at least as a millennial, when I was in high school, even I think until the end of college, yeah, I think until I was like a fully grown adult, nobody had a smartphone. So like that.
Huge.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge. And even when I was in high school, people had desktops at home. They didn't, every kid did not by any stretch of the imagination have like their own laptop. But it was enough that by the time I got to college, you were required, strongly recommended that everyone have their own laptop, and everybody did. But that's a huge difference, just the amount of connectivity to people, places, and things that you owe something to. Right.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I feel that so much. Like, I am done for the day and I go and I sit in my room and like, my laptop's in my backpack. Why don't I pull that out and start working? And I had to deal with myself for a bit and be like, no, like, you don't need to. You could rest. Like, that is fine. Which I think is something that a lot of people that I talk to also resonate with. Like, I was hanging out with my friends yesterday. We were all just, like, on our laptops. I was like, we don't have to be doing this.
Like,
it's Sunday evening. Why are we all just on our laptops?
Oh, my gosh.
There's
a, you're like, you guys, there's a better way. It's like an intervention. Mm-hmm. It is. There's also been articles written about how social media activates the same pathways and chemicals in the brain as highly addictive drugs.
Yes.
So, yeah, this ish is no joke. So I want to just read a little bit more excerpts from the article in which the writer explains why this might be that we as millennials did internalize this message that you need to be working all of the time, and if you don't, you're doomed, and therefore we are working very hard in some areas, but more importantly, constantly thinking about working, and therefore too burned out to do simple tasks like return an item of clothing or mail a thing that needs to have a stamp put on it. I mean, I'm such a millennial in that way. I'm like, what? You want me to, you want me to put a thing in an envelope, write an address on it, and then a return address, and then you're operating under the assumption that I have stamps. Sometimes I've gone to like three different places to buy stamps. There's no stamps. And then there, you have to like go to the post office. Like, this is like the first time in my life I've ever lived in a place that has a mailbox. I don't have a mailbox. I don't go to the end of my driveway and put in the mail. I live in like an apartment building. I have to like seek out a place to get this thing into the mail system. Anyways, it does. I resonate with that. And yet, you know, I'm also that student who would like cry if I got a B, right? So she goes on to say, this is speaking about a book. She said, in Kids These Days, Human Capital and the Making of Millennials, the author of that book, Malcolm Harris, lays out the myriad of ways in which our generation has been trained, tailored, primed and optimized for the workplace. First in school, then through secondary education, starting as very young children. Risk management used to be a business practice, Harris writes. Now it is our dominant child rearing strategy. Okay, so what he's basically breaking down is that millennials were raised the way that they were raised, both by their parents, but also by society, by the school system, by social media. I want to say social media. I'm like, what existed before social media? I forget. Mm-hmm. But like TV and magazines and that stuff, whatever you media, just media. Right. See there. Totally a millennial. I'm like, wait, what was media called before social media? Yikes. So anyway, by all of those things, that the essential rearing strategy for millennials is that you have to be able to be a high performer, right? And you have to be able to outperform the person beside you. And that the goal is to excel in the workplace. Even as little children, we didn't just play games that were for fun. We played games that were to help us optimize our performance. So constantly from a young age, we were trained that the goal of life is to optimize your performance and to outperform your peers in order that you can gain access to the quote unquote good life, or the best jobs, etc. And then the author of the BuzzFeed article Anne goes on to say, "We didn't try to break the system since that's not how we had been raised. We tried to win it." She says, "But millennial students were convinced that their first job out of college would not only determine their career trajectory, but also their intrinsic value for the rest of their lives." She says, "We put up with companies treating us poorly because we don't see another option. We don't quit. We internalize that we are not striving hard enough, and we get a second gig. What's worse, the feeling of accomplishment that follows an exhausting task, passing the final, finishing the massive work project, never comes. The exhaustion experienced in burnout combines," this is a quote, "the exhaustion experienced in burnout combines an intense yearning for this state of completion with the tormenting sense that it cannot be attained, that there is always some demand or anxiety or distraction which can't be silenced," says Josh Cohen, a psychoanalyst specializing in burnout. He goes on to write, "You feel burnout when you've exhausted all your internal resources and yet cannot free yourself of the nervous compulsion to go on regardless." And in conclusion, the author of this article writes, "This is why the fundamental criticism of millennials that we are lazy and entitled is so frustrating. We hustle so hard that we figured out how to avoid wasting time doing things like eating meals and called entitled for asking for fair compensation and benefits like working remotely, et cetera, et cetera." She said, "We're called whiny for talking frankly about how much work we do or how exhausted we are by it, because overworking for less money isn't always visible, because job hunting now means trawling LinkedIn, because overtime now means replying to emails in bed. The extent of our labor is often ignored or degraded." So what she says in the end is basically that the solution is very deep. She says this is not a task or a line on a to-do list or even a New Year's resolution. It's a way of thinking about life and what joy and meaning we can derive, not just from optimizing it, but living it. Which is another way of saying it's life's actual work, which I take to mean life's actual work is exiting burnout. So we took a lot of time to talk through what burnout for the millennial generation means, and I have a feeling that that's going to resonate for a lot of you. And I want to take a few moments to talk about how we can overcome burnout. I think the most important line in the article that speaks to how we can overcome it is the line about that we as millennials have been taught that our first job out of college not only determines our career trajectory, but our intrinsic value as human beings. We've talked about this on the show before. It is called a demon, aka a contingency of self-worth. And so what this article is essentially saying to me is that millennials are burned out because we have more contingencies of self-worth than any generation before. And we have more deeply internalized the belief that our value as human beings is founded on the things that we create, the things that we accomplish, the accolades that we receive, rather than just on our existence. And how do we get away from that belief? That is how we get unburned out, right? So we get away from that belief by doing things that fly in the face of our contingencies of self-worth, okay? One way to diminish the power that your contingencies of self-worth have over you is to, for example, do something that you know you're not going to be good at. To do something that you know you're not going to win. And to be able to tolerate without trying to fix the discomfort that that will create within you as a result of these demons, as a result of this social conditioning, as a result of these contingencies of self-worth, that discomfort will arise. And if we want to disempower those demons, aka relieve the burnout eventually, then we have to do the thing that we're interested in, whether it be a new sport, drawing, giving a public talk. We have to do those things without focusing on winning. And rather than trying to fix the discomfort of not winning by winning, by getting so good that we'll win, we have to just get comfortable with discomfort, right? So that is one way to overcome burnout. A second way to overcome burnout is not just by doing something that your contingencies of self-worth would not have you to do, but secondly, by constantly reminding yourself of the facts that your value and your worth cannot possibly come from the things that you do or acquire. Those things have so many factors that are outside of your control. Our Declaration of Independence, I think it is, says, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men, aka all men and women, as we well know, are created equal. That is where our worth comes from being a human being, right? Everything else after that should just be about what brings us purposefulness, what brings us joy, what is aligned with our values. So we need to constantly remind ourselves that we don't have to do shit to prove our worth, right? And that we need to check in with ourselves consistently to make sure that whatever we're doing, we're not doing it to prove or to earn our worth. So those are two ways that I believe we can begin to change the paradigm, change the mental condition of being a millennial, is to do things that require us to be okay with not winning, A, and B, to constantly remind ourselves, write it down, record it, have a saying that lets you remember it, that your worth does not come from the things that you accomplish. Your worth is, and the things that you accomplish should be for you, because that's what you wanted to do, not that you felt you had to do to earn or to prove your worth. And then the last thing that I'll say, which is easier said than done, and I think we can have a whole nother episode about this, because I do want to talk about my own journey of overcoming burnout. But the last thing that I'll share that I think is an essential ingredient to overcoming burnout is to have forced disconnection from all of the people, places, things that you answer to and that send this implicit message that you should be working all the time. So in other words, have blackout time in your life. Have times during the day when you install an app on your phone and on your computer so that you can't access the internet, right? Or you can't access social media. If you have the self-control to just turn your phone off and turn your computer off, and you can do that for, let's say, 2-3 hours a day, 3 hours a day, at least to me, 3 hours a day of turning off your devices, that would be like revolutionary, not just revolutionary, but like insane. That sounds kind of insane. That's how much I think this expectation exists. So I want us to understand that having time of forced disconnection so that we cannot work, right? It is so that we make it physically impossible to ourselves that we are able to work and respond and be constantly available and constantly performing. I think we have to force those times. And the reason why I say force is because, as the author of the burnout article writes about, you know, she writes about how she didn't want to believe she had burnout because she thought she was stronger than that. But, and I hear so many people say, I'm not going to use an app to block myself from my phone or from social media. I should have self-control. Well, guess what? Your phone, your computer are highly addictive substances. And just because you need an external device to help you have some distance, to help you break your addiction, that does not make you weak. It makes you strong for tapping into the things that you need to allow yourself to strive. So blackout time. So send us your questions, your comments, your resonance, any concerns about this at sarah@thismiraculouslife.com. I hope that these three strategies can help all of us to start to liberate ourselves from the millennial burnout. And we need to keep talking about this because there's so much more to say. Have a miraculous day.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.